John Ashbery was an American poet like no other, winner of nearly every major poetry prize, including in a single year the Pulitzer, the National Book Award, and the National Book Critics Circle Prize. He was known as experimental and avant-garde. His early interest was in modern visual art until he discovered it was simpler to carry pens and paper than an easel and paints. In reality, though, the shift probably was influenced by fellow writers Frank O'Hara and Kenneth Koch while they were all students at Harvard. Ashbery graduated in 1949 and went on to Columbia University, where he completed his master's thesis on the work of W.H. Auden, the poet who later chose Ashbery's 1956 book, Some Trees, as the winner of the esteemed Yale Younger Poets Prize, despite not entirely understanding it. A hint at his poetic career ahead that spanned more than six decades. Stay with us to hear the now past American voice of John Ashbery, who died on September 3, 2017, at the age of 90. This is New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. Born in July 1927 in Rochester, New York, John Ashbery was raised on a farm near Lake Ontario. His mother was a biology teacher and his father a farmer, but after having lost his only brother to a childhood illness, his kindred spirit was his grandfather, a physics professor. In boarding school, Ashbery discovered the poetry of Auden and Dylan Thomas and began writing his own poems that eventually, in the words of one critic, refused to impose an arbitrary order on a world of flux and chaos. Later grouped with his Harvard friends as part of the informal New York School of Poets, a label like being considered the dean of language poets, he resisted, working on his own terms first as an art critic in France and for New York magazines, strengthening his ties to French surrealist and abstract expressionism before settling into writing and teaching poetry in New York City. Here's a reading from the New Letters on the Air archives by John Ashbery, beginning with a poem that Karen Rothman, the 2017 biographer of The Songs We Know Best, John Ashbery's early life, considers to be one of his 10 best. It's called Soonest Mended, which he shared with the Kansas City Art Institute's class of 1986 at their commencement.
I was the class poet when I graduated from college, and I wasn't able to produce a class poem. So what I did was to take a poem that I had already written that sounded kind of ominous, and I read that, and that seemed to go over okay. Since then, I've written a lot more ominous poetry, which I'm going to share some with you. Not too much, but a little. This is the first one. These poems are in somewhat chronological order. This one was written about 15 years ago, I believe, and it's called Soonest Mended, as in the phrase, least said, soonest mended. I should explain a couple of obscure references in it. One is, well, Orlando Furioso is not an obscure reference, but there's a painting, which you possibly know, since you're art students, of a scene from it by Anger, which is referred to. Also, a forgotten comic strip called Happy Hooligan, about a funny hobo who wore a tin can hat. You may be wondering what these things have to do with each other, and you may not know when I've finished. Anyway, here goes. Barely tolerated, living on the margin in our technological society, we were always having to be rescued on the brink of destruction, like heroines in Orlando Furioso, before it was time to start all over again. There would be thunder in the bushes, a rustling of coils, and Angelica, in the Angra painting, was considering the colorful but small monster near her toe. It's a sort of miniature dragon, actually, in the painting, as though wondering whether forgetting the whole thing might not, in the end, be the only solution. And then there always came a time when Happy Hooligan, in his rusted green automobile, came plowing down the course just to make sure everything was okay. Only by that time, we were in another chapter and confused about how to receive this latest piece of information. Was it information? Weren't we rather acting this out for someone else's benefit, thoughts in a mind with room enough and to spare for our little problems, so they began to seem, our daily quandary about food and the rent and bills to be paid. To reduce all this to a small variant, to step free at last, minuscule on the gigantic plateau, this was our ambition, to be small and clear and free. Alas, the summer's energy wanes quickly, a moment and it is gone. And no longer may we make the necessary arrangements, simple as they are. Our star was brighter, perhaps, when it had water in it. Now there is no question even of that, but only of holding on to the hard earth so as not to get thrown off, with an occasional dream, a vision. A robin flies across the upper corner of the window. You brush your hair away and cannot quite see. Or a wound will flash against the sweet faces of the others. Something like, this is what you wanted to hear, so why did you think of listening to something else? We are all talkers, it is true, but underneath the talk lies the moving and not wanting to be moved, the loose meaning, untidy and simple like a threshing floor. These then were some hazards of the course. Yet, though we knew the course was hazards and nothing else, it was still a shock when almost a quarter of a century later, the clarity of the rules dawned on you for the first time. They were the players, and we who had struggled at the game were merely spectators. Though subject to its vicissitudes and moving with it out of the tearful stadium, borne on shoulders at last. Night after night, this message returns, repeated in the flickering bulbs of the sky, raised past us, taken away from us, yet ours, over and over until the end that is past truth, the being of our sentences in the climate that fostered them, not ours to own like a book, but to be with, and sometimes to be without, alone and desperate. But the fantasy makes it ours, a kind of fence sitting, raised to the level of an aesthetic ideal. These were moments, years, solid with reality, faces, nameable events, kisses, heroic acts, but like the friendly beginning of a geometrical progression, not too reassuring, as though meaning could be cast aside someday when it had been outgrown. Better, you said, to stay cowering like this in the early lessons, since the promise of learning is a delusion. And I agreed, adding that tomorrow would alter the sense of what had already been learned, that the learning process is extended in this way, so that from this standpoint, none of us ever graduates from college, for time is an emulsion, and probably thinking not to grow up is the brightest kind of maturity for us, right now at any rate. And you see, both of us were right, though nothing has somehow come to nothing. The avatars of our conforming to the rules and living around the home have made, well, in a sense, good citizens of us, brushing the teeth and all that, and learning to accept the charity of the hard moments as they are doled out. For this is action, this not being sure, this careless preparing, sowing the seeds crooked in the furrow, making ready to forget, and always coming back to the mooring of starting out that day so long ago.
John Ashbery, reading Soonest Mended, published in the Paris Review in 1969, and then the following year in his highly praised book, The Double Dream of Spring, about which Harold Bloom wrote, "The chances are very good that John Ashbery will come to dominate the last third of the century as William Butler Yeats dominated the first." In fact, it was 5 years later, in 1975, that Ashbery won the Literary Triple Crown, the Pulitzer, the National Book Award, and the National Book Critics Circle Prize for Self-Portrait in a Convex Mirror. The title poem of that book was a meditation on the 16th century Italian painting with the same name by Parmigianino. Between his ekphrastic poetry and his reputation for being supportive of younger writers, it's no wonder the Kansas City Art Institute asked him to read at their 1986 commencement ceremony. From that recording for New Letters on the Air, the now late John Ashbery introduces poetry from his then recent book called A Wave.
This is a poem in prose, or at any rate, it's in prose. Definition of a prose poem has never been satisfactorily laid down. And it's called Whatever It Is, Wherever You Are. The cross-hatching technique which allowed our ancestors to exchange certain genetic traits for others in order to provide their offspring with a way of life at once more variegated and more secure than their own has just about run out of steam and has left us wondering once more what there is about this plush solitude that makes us think we will ever get out or even want to. The ebony hands of the clock always seem to mark the same hour. That is why it always seems the same, though it is, of course, changing constantly, subtly, as though fed by an underground stream. If only we could go out and back as when we were kids and smoke and fool around and just stay out of the way for a little while. But that's just it, don't you see? We are out and back. No one has ever used the front door. We have always lived in this place without a name, without shame, a place for grown-ups to talk and laugh, having a good time. When we were children, it seemed that adulthood would be like climbing a tree, that there would be a view from there, breathtaking because slightly more elusive. But now we can see only down, first down through the branches, and further down the surprisingly steep grass patch that slopes away from the base of the tree. It certainly is a different view, but not the one we expected. What did they want us to do? Stand around this way, monitoring every breath, checking each impulse for the return address, wondering constantly about evil, until we necessarily fall into a state of torpor that is probably the worst sin of all? To what purpose did they cross-hatch so effectively, so that the luminous surface that was underneath is transformed into another, also luminous, but so shifting and so alive with suggestiveness that it is like quicksand? To take a step there would be to fall through the fragile net of uncertainties into the bog of certainty, otherwise known as the slough of despond. Probably they meant for us to enjoy the things they enjoyed, like late summer evenings, and hope that we'd find others and thank them for providing us with the wherewithal to find and enjoy them. Singing the way they did in the old time, we can sometimes see through the tissues and tracings the genetic process has laid down between us and them. The tendrils can suggest a hand or a specific color. The yellow of the tulip, for instance, will flash for a moment in such a way that after it has been withdrawn, we can be sure that there was no imagining, no auto-suggestion here. But at the same time, it becomes as useless as all subtracted memories. It has brought certainty without heat or light. Yet still in the old time, in the faraway summer evenings, they must have had a word for this, or known that we would someday need one and wished to help. Then it is that a kind of purring occurs, like the wind sneaking around the baseboards of a room, not the infamous still small voice, but an ancillary speech that is parallel to the slithering of our own doubt-fleshed imaginings, a visible soundtrack of the way we sound as we move from encouragement to despair to exasperation and back again, with a gesture sometimes that is like an aborted movement outward toward some cape or promontory from which the view would extend in two directions, backward and forward. But that is only a polite hope in the same vein as all the others, crumpled and put away, and almost not to be distinguished from any of them, except that it knows we know, and in the context of not knowing is a fluidity that flashes like silver, that seems to say a film has been exposed and an image will, most certainly will, not like the last time, come to consider itself within the frame. It must be an old photograph of you out in the yard, looking almost afraid in the crisp, raking light that afternoons in the city held in those days, unappeased, not accepting anything from anybody. So what else is new? I'll tell you what is. You are accepting this now from the invisible, unknown sender, and the light that was intended, you thought, only to rake or glance, is now directed full in your face, as it in fact always was. But you were squinting so hard, fearful of accepting it, that you didn't know this. Whether it warms or burns is another matter, which we will not go into here. The point is that you are accepting it and holding on to it, like love from someone you always thought you couldn't stand, and whom you now recognize as a brother and equal. Someone whose face is the same as yours in the photograph, but who is someone else, all of whose thoughts and feelings are directed at you, falling like a gentle slab of light that will ultimately loosen and dissolve the crusted suspicion, the timely self-hatred, the efficient cold directness, the horrible good manners, the sensible resolves, and the senseless nights spent waiting in utter abandon that have grown up to be you in the tree with no view, and place you firmly in the good-natured circle of your ancestors' games and entertainments.
The Past American Voice of John Ashbery, reading Whatever It Is, Wherever You Are, from his 1984 book, A Wave, winner of both the Lenore Marshall Poetry Prize and the Bullingen Prize. Works from that 11th collection and the books we mentioned earlier, including all the poems he reads in the New Letters on the Air program, are also in his 1986 Selected Poems, published by Penguin. We'll hear an excerpt from the title poem, A Wave, in just a bit, but first, here's the late John Ashbery with something from that collection that's completely different.
This is one in a somewhat lighter vein, but it still seems to have a slightly valedictory quality to it. It's a poem that's written in rhyme and meant to kind of exorcise the tune of a popular song that got into my head about 6 years ago when it was popular. Some of the older students might have even heard it. It's called Reunited. It's now one of those songs that you can only buy on a record that is advertised on television late at night that you have to send away for. Anyway, it's called The Songs We Know Best. Just like a shadow in an empty room, seem to be neither humble nor proud, frei aber einsam. And should anybody question the viability of this process, you can point to the accessible result. Not like a great victory that tirelessly sweeps over mankind again and again at the end of each era, presuming you can locate it, for the greater good of history, though you are not the first person to confuse its solicitation with something like scorn, but the slow polishing of an infinitely tiny cage, big enough to hold all the dispiritedness, contempt, and incorrect conclusions based on false premises that now slow you down, but by that time, enchaliced, will sound attentive, tonic even, an antidote to badly reasoned desiring, footfalls of the police approaching gingerly through the soft spring air. Thank you.
That's an excerpt from the long title poem from John Ashbery's book, A Wave. In 2008, the Library of America published their first book featuring a living poet, John Ashbery, Collected Poems, 1956 to 1987. That volume contains the four poems you heard today, as well as more than 100 pages of rare and previously uncollected material from 1945 to 1990. It was edited by Mark Ford, who published a book-length interview with John Ashbery in 2003. Look for the second volume from the Library of America in October 2017, also edited by Mark Ford, called John John Ashbery, Collected Poems 1991 to 2000. The poet, who wrote more than two dozen books and received the 2011 National Humanities Medal from President Obama, died on September 3, 2017 in his home at age 90. Today's show came from a recording made at the Kansas City Art Institute when John Ashbery read as part of the May 1986 commencement ceremony. It was produced that year for New Letters on the Air by Rebecca Presson, Judy Ray, and KCUR's Kevin Danner. For more, visit our website, newletters.org, where you can also sign up for a free weekly podcast under Ways to Listen, or find us on iTunes. We're also on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter at New Letters Radio. A production of New Letters Magazine at UMKC. Help on today's production came from Scott Middleton at the Mars Sound Archives and our own Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam. Thanks for listening to New Letters on the Air.